Do it. That's part of his job.
Folks, don't forget to sign your guarantee. I'm going to start off with right there.
How is everybody tonight? Sorry to keep you waiting. How many of you watched the debates last night? You must have liked them. I'm one of those political junkies. I have a 9-foot screen in my family room, which I have a projector TV. It's great for football games. And I put the debate up on there. It's pretty cool. My daughter says I have to get out for it. But anyway, it was fun. Tonight, we're going to do a review of what we've done so far. This is very good for your midterm, okay? Midterm is in 2 weeks from tonight, not next week, the following night, okay? Next week, you're going to have 2 guest lecturers. It's a treat. Far better than me, but they're both named Farley. One is my sister Susan, who is probably, and I excuse my bragging, the number one intellectual property attorney in upstate New York, maybe the United States. She's a partner with Tesman, Rothenberg, Farley, and Massini. She knows all things intellectual property, and she is going to do about an hour on intellectual property law and talk to you about it. The second half is going to be on criminal law from my dad, Senator Burr, who is an experienced professor here. He's here for 36 years in the school of business and is a master storyteller. So you're going to have a great time next week, and I hope you enjoy it. The following week is our midterm. It will be multiple choice. There's a few fill-in-the-blanks, maybe, on there. But everything on the midterm will be off these slides. It's not on the slides, it's not on the midterm. Okay? When you go to review for the midterm, particularly look at tonight's slides, because that's the review up to this point in time. Okay? We do reviews before the midterm. This is going to be part of it. Obviously, next week's lecture, tonight's the opening, so we're going to compress it. I'll also do a review for you before the final. Have a special treat for those of you who take my class in the morning. You know I bring a pizza. Okay, that's the water I'm going to bring in here. You guys aren't old enough. Okay, come on. So we'll bring a pizza. Okay, you'll have fun. We'll talk about a review of that before the final exam. It's usually on that Saturday. Okay. Last time, we discussed, last time, we talked about possession and transferring of title and property. We began our adventure into personal property, okay? We talked about how you acquire the rights and ownership and possession of personal property, okay? We've listed through those rights. If you remember, we'll go through that again real quick in our review. Then we talked about gifts. two types of gifts. Remember Anida, IDA, intent, delivery, acceptance. You remember Anida, you pretty much are all the way home on gifts. All you need to remember on gifts, aside from Anida, is that there's two types. Gifts that are vitals, of a lie, gifts cause mortis, and contemplation of death. Okay? You remember those two? We're all the way home. Okay. Tonight, as I said, we're going to conduct a brief review of what we've had to date. Then we're going to get into liens. We're going to get into security interests and bailments. Okay? Then we're going to do a fun case on the criminal law, which I usually do after next week's session, but we'll do it tonight. It's a fun case. Matter of fact, any of you who go to law school, it's the first case you'll learn in criminal law. Criminal law, one thing you need to know about it, it's interrelated with property law. Because most crimes, unless they're against people, are against property. You're stealing property, or you're taking property, or you're defacing property. So property has a high level of criminal law, although the case we're going to study about tonight is not really property related, but it's criminal law related, and the two are linked. Remember, property and the law grow together, it's interrelated. That's postulate number two. Anybody tell me what postulate number one is? Golden prize. Yes. Awesome. Property is a collection of rights, not a collection of things. Number two, property and the law are interrelated, they're intertwined. Number three, who can tell me over here? What's the third possible? You guys need to know these cold because they won't be on anything. Third possible is property rights are inherent to our humanity, inherent to human beings. And the fourth postulate brings it all together. Your property rights are expressed through the term equoit. Exclude, possess, use, and transfer. It's what you can do with property. You know those four postulates. You're most of the way knowing this class. Okay. In order to know where we're going, we need to know where we've been. Let's look back a little bit so we can refresh ourselves. And again, look at these slides. They help you get through the midterm. Okay. What is the law? Very simple definition. Laws, rules by which civilization is ordered. Where did the law start? It started in Rome. Why? Because they were the first society that looked beyond themselves. They used the law to structure their society, and they used it not only after they conquered other peoples, but to instill consumer confidence and do a consistent template for governance and operations. Okay? Remember, the law of Rome was based on the Roman code. It was statutory by edict of the emperor or the Senate. Going to England, remember Henry, Eleanor, Richard, and John. Henry the Second, one of the greatest kings in England, he was the one who abolished trial by combat, started trial by juries. He started the British common law. Big feat, a figure in the law. Sweet Eleanor, his wife, was the one who attacked him with an army. She is known as Snow White as the wicked stepmother. Okay? In Snow White. Prince Charming is Richard the Lionheart, and it's his brother John that signs the Magna Carta. Remember, after he dies, okay? Magna Carta is a foundational document for property rights. It's the first constitutional element of the British Constitution, and no other originates the Charter of Liberties that turns around and establishes so many of the rights we hold dear, especially rights of property. Okay? Remember, one of the things it did not do is abolish slavery or serfdom, because it was created and crafted by the property-owning classes who used that feudalistic concept that they exerted to be able to establish their economy. Okay? Magna Carta flowed into the system of Anglo-American law. Remember, you have constitutional law, statutes, and then case law, which amplifies that or interprets it. Okay? You have the common law, which came out of England, transferred to the United States. One of the things you need in the law is consistency. Stare decisis. Let the decision stand. That's the concept of precedent. A previous court held that. We need to be consistent. It's going to do that. That's why the common law was able to be transferred from England to here. Okay? Blackstone, who was the legal scholar who recognized that if he recorded all those court decisions, they'd be able to use them across the English-speaking world, wrote down all these decisions in his commentaries. Blackstone's commentaries, the Bible of the Law, were not only used in England, but also in the early United States. They became the basis of the common law. Remember our first case out there, Pearson v. Post? Okay, that's our first property case. We did a case, Marbury versus Madison, which illuminated the discussion on judicial review. God bless you, but the highest court in the land, the Supreme Court, was able to interpret what the Constitution said. Remember, the Constitution is the rule book for the United States under law. Marbury versus Madison, that established the concept of judicial review. Pearson v. Post, we had our first property case. And remember, it's all about possession. Remember the fox? Chase that fox. The guy who turned around and shot the fox and carried it away demonstrated possession over the fox. Mere pursuit, just the fact that it was being chased, is not possession. Remember how linked possession is to ownership in the law. Okay. You have three types of property rights expressed. Real, which are rights in land. Personal, rights in objects. And intellectual, rights in ideas. Personal is what we've been going through last time and what we'll go through extensively tonight. Intellectual property is what you'll go through next time. Okay, and real is the second half of the course. What's the difference between real and personal property? Real property is rights in land and things attached to them. Okay, so fixtures that are things attached to the land become real property. Anything that's movable, that's tangible, your car, your dog, your car keys, your backpack, your food, your water, all of that is personal property. Okay? Leases. Remember, rental agreements and common law were considered personal property. Today, they're considered real property. It's a right in land for a slice of time. So today, leases are considered real property. When it comes to crops, you have two types. Fructus naturales, which are things that were put there by nature. Hence, naturales. Okay? They are trees, bushes, grass, things that are put there by nature. Fructus industriales, okay, are things that are cultivated. Grains, vegetables, and crops. Fructus industriales are personal property. When you turn around and pick that tomato, it becomes a personal property. Okay? Things that are like a tree in your front yard are real property. It's attached to the land. Okay? Fixtures, as we say, if you turn around and attach a piece of personal property, like a curtain rod, to your house, becomes part of the house, becomes personal property. You detach it, and it becomes personal property. So you fix it, it's real property. You detach it, it's personal. Okay? That's what a fixture is. Okay. How do you have acquisition and loss of title or right to title of personal property? Remember, we have transfer or sale, occupancy or possession. You occupy it. Okay, you take it. Adverse possession, statute of limitations. I have it. You can't sue me anymore because of the fact that I've had it for so long. Accession is when I turn around and add value to it. That's the case of the claim of rent. Okay? Remember that? Confusion, that's when you have two items, personal property, that get mixed up and how that gets divided. One of the ways you can get title and rights to land is through a court order. You don't know whose town it is, you go to court and the judge will decide that. That's done by court order. Remember, there's three types of that. Pleven, trover, and trespass. We'll get to that in a second. And we have the issue of when an item of personal property is lost, mislaid, or abandoned. Remember, lost and mislaid under New York State law are the same. The view is the same. The distinction between lost and mislaid in common law was lost means that it was put in a place that you wouldn't expect it. That's the watch on the bathroom floor. Mislaid is an item which you would expect to find there, but it was forgotten. That's the briefcase that's in the trial table. Okay? Abandoned is when the owner of the property, those who people with the right in the property, say, I don't want it anymore. That's when you turn around and you give it away to the whole free world. Anybody wants it can take it. Lastly, we have gifts. Gifts causa mortis, gifts inter vivos. Okay. With respect to lost property, what happens with it? If the value is under $20, you must make a reasonable effort to find the owner. If it's more than $20, you have to turn it into the police, and there's a specified period of time in which you can get it back. Abandoned property is gone for good. Once you relinquish it, anybody can pick it up. You're giving it away to the whole free world, whoever wants it. You relinquish, as owner, title and possession. Okay. It's cheap is when property, nobody knows who owns it, and it goes to the state as a default. Nobody knows who owns it. It's in the bank accounts, it goes to claims. The bank can't find you anymore. They're the items where somebody dies and they have no heirs. Accession, we just discussed that. Remember, title by judgment. Replevin, that's when you sue to get the item itself back. You took my cow, I want it back, give me Bessie back. Okay? Trespass is when I just want the money damages. I don't want Bessie back, she likes you better than she likes me. And as a result of that, just pay me the money that Bessie's worth. And lastly, you have trover, which is the action to recover the value along with damages. So pay me not only the value of Bessie's milk, and the rental cost of a cow, whatever that is, and Bessie herself back. Okay? Gifts, you have two types of gifts. Gifts inter vivos, gifts viva, remember life, okay? Gifts during your lifetime, you give away a gift to causa mortis and contemplation of death. Remember Aunt Ida, IDA, intent, delivery, and acceptance. You need those three elements, all of them, to be a valid gift. Okay, there's lovely Aunt Ida, think of her. Okay, gifts and contemplation of marriage. What has to happen in order for gifts in contemplation of marriage to occur, to be valid? What has to happen? The marriage! You got it. You have to get married. Living together, pretending to be married, acting as if you're married, doesn't count. Okay? Hence, when you try to get engaged, if you're a gentleman,
Make sure you don't give the ring on a holiday. If you're a lady, ask for it on that time. Okay. Gifts cause a mortis. Remember, a couple elements. Has to be delivery of the gift, and the person has to die. If they die, they do not have to die of what they are afraid of dying of. So if the doctor tells that person that they're dying of cancer and they get struck by a bus, doesn't matter, the gift is valid. If they don't die, if there's no delivery, this gift is no good. Okay. Any questions? I know we did that fast, but that's basically what we've done up to date on the miscarriage. So study those slides. We try to help. We want you all to do well. Okay. Any questions? None? Okay. Let's go into tonight. Liens, bailments, special property interests, and then our fun little case. Okay. What's a lien? We always start with Black's Law Dictionary, which is a treasure trove. Black's always gives us good definitions. It's a good place to start. It defines a lien as a security or encumbrance upon property. Those of you who have financed a car and purchased one, the lien is the lien against your car. So if you don't pay the bank for the car payment, they can come and take your car. How do they do that? They have a lien against it. Okay? It's the legal entity, the legal document, that allows them to take that car. It's the right to encumber certain property for security on a debt. Okay? You borrow the money, and if you don't pay the money that you borrow, or for the service that you get to take that item. It's a security. Okay? Two types of liens. There's a common law lien. A lien that has been decided through the courts through custom and practice. That's what the common law recognizes. And then there's a statutory lien. That's a lien that has been determined to be inviolate by the state legislature. Common law liens, a debt that has arisen for services performed on the item. Title to the thing is in the debtor, and possession of the thing is in the creditor. Okay? The debtor is the person who takes out the loan, or the money, or gets the service. Okay? Creditor is the person who gives it. So basically, the person who gives you that service, or gives you the money, has possession of the thing. They get to keep it if you do not pay up. Okay? Two types or classes of liens. There's a general lien. That is, if you have a whole bunch of property, the general lien allows the lien holder to take all the property. A specific lien allows you to take only that individual item, that specific property. 99.9%, maybe not that high, but close to it, of liens are specific liens, special liens, designated on that property. Okay? The lien for your car, the car loan, does not allow somebody to take your bank account. It allows them to take the car. Okay? Under certain instances, the law allows general liens. We'll get to that in a minute, but those circumstances are very limited. Okay? Okay. A lien has to be given by the owner of the property. Okay? You cannot give a lien if you don't own the item. I'll give you an example. I turn around, have you a car, you say yes. If you had a car, what kind of car would you have? Hyundai. You have a beautiful brand new Hyundai. And I turn around and I say, my wheels are in the shop, can I borrow yours? You mean the kind of lady that you are? Say, sure, Bob, take it for a spin. I drive down the road and I notice that the brakes are a little squishy on the Hyundai. So I take my favorite neighborhood mechanic
and say, please put a new set of brakes on this car. It's not tight enough for me. He comes and says to me, after you put on a new set of brakes, Bob, that'll be $836. I say, not my car. Not my problem. Can that car dealer, the garage dealer, take a lien on that car until you pay him or I pay him? No, they cannot, because it's not my car. If, however, I brought my car to them and asked them to put brakes on my car and did not pay it, he gets to keep the car until I pay it. Okay? But I cannot encumber your car with a lien because I don't own it. That would be right or fair. Okay? So only the owner of the property can have a lien put against it. Only makes sense. Okay? Now, general liens. There's a specific area of the law that allows for general liens. It's with respect to merchants and service providers who cannot choose who they serve. There are certain entities who have to serve everybody. There's laws against them refusing service. Innkeepers, common carriers, and there's a few others, we'll get to those in a minute. If I run a hotel, I can't turn around and say, I won't allow you to stay at my hotel. Why? Because in the past history of the United States, there's been innkeepers who say, I don't like you for whatever reason. They don't like your color, they don't like your race, they don't like, you know, the fact that you have a funny last name. There are a few points, and as a result of that, they didn't serve you. So we now have laws that say, walk in there, they've got to give you a room. Same thing with common carriers, buses, airlines, trains. Trains are a little bit of an exception because most of the passenger rail in the United States is generally offered by the federal government. But historically, it wasn't always true. All those people, all those common carriers, have to allow anyone who comes to their window to provide the service. As a result, the law gives them more latitude because they can't select you to be able to take a general lien against you versus a special lien. What does that mean? If I leave all my stuff in the hotel room, they get to take a lien against all that stuff. Not just a single item. They can't just say, I will keep your computer until you pay your hotel room. Anything that's in that hotel room, they get to keep until you pay your bill. Okay? Same thing with the common carrier. They're allowed to do that. Keep all your luggage, say, until you pay your bill. Okay? Same also applies to warehousers. Okay? That's somebody who turns around, there's a big warehouse in downtown Albany. That's a goofy picture of it. Okay. Additionally, there's also certain statutory liens that allows when they can be enforced on payment. What are the categories of statutory liens? Mechanics liens, as we talked about it. I turn around and do work on your car. Guess what? They can keep the car. Hospitals have liens. They can't keep you, but they can keep other things. Okay. It's not like the car at the garage if they fix you up in a hospital. That is pretty much a meaningless lien because in New York State you have something known as the Bad Debt and Charity Fund that says every person in New York State who presents themselves at a hospital has to be treated. And if you don't pay your bill, the state of New York will pay it for you. Okay? Now, the hospital can still go after you for reimbursement on that, because the Bad Debt Charity Fund doesn't pay the whole thing. And New York State can go after you if you have the money to pay for it. Okay? Artisans, animal caretakers. For some reason, the state legislature wanted to protect vets. Okay? Stone carvers. Why do you think stone carvers are separated out on that? You got it! Ever heard of carved in stone? Well, once you carve something in stone, it's kind of hard to take it back. So if you decide to have your handsome face put on your headstone, might be for your little temperature. And if you don't like it, guess what? You keep that headstone until such what they want to do with it, I don't know.
Stone carvers, get it? Shipkeepers and almost all creditors are given liens. Okay. What is a lien? It's a contract. You contract with that creditor in return for getting either service or amount of money. You turn around and say, in return for payment on that, I'll give you the security. Now, you can waive a lien by contract because it is a contract. In a contract, because of the very nature of the fact that a lien is a contract, the contract can say, I can waive that. I don't have to take it. There's also the ability to waive the lien if you substitute security. I turn around and say, listen, don't repossess my car. I know I can't pay my car loan this month, but I have all this stock that I really don't want to sell right now. I'll give you a security interest in the stock if you let me take my car back. That might be able to be a substitution. What else weighs it? A demand for unlawful charges. Remember, I bring my car in to XYZ car shop, and instead of charging me $600 for my brake job, they charge me $20,000. Well, that's an unlawful charge. It's usurious. It's well in advance of where you do it. I never agreed to it. That is deemed to have waived, under courts or public policy, the lien. Okay? Satisfaction. If I turn around and pay off the debt, I pay off that car loan, then it's not. Then the lien goes away because I satisfied it. Okay? A lien is not deemed waived if the lien holder, that's the person who has the right to collect on the lien, temporarily surrenders the goods to the bailiff. If I turn around and you take my computer for security, and I go up and beg to them, I need to get files off that. That doesn't waive the lien if they're kind enough to allow you to take the files off the computer. Okay. Bailments. What is a bailment? Again, we'll go back to any. Before I get to there, any questions on liens? They're a security interest. That's all they are. It's a contract that give you a security in return for either money or services. Okay? Bailments. What's a bailment? Go to Blacks. Again, a bailment is a contract too. Bailment's a contractual relationship created by transfer of possession, not ownership, not ownership. You don't transfer title. You just transfer custody. Okay? You transfer possession of personal property for a purpose. Okay? Remember by this acronym. And what happens with an acronym? If I put that on there, what do you think? Where might you see this acronym again? Very good, on the test. If we give you an acronym like Anita, that might appear on the test. Matter of fact, it's going to. If we give you DAPR, which are the elements of a bailment, that's going to appear on the test. Okay? What are the elements of a bailment? Delivery. You have to give the item over to the person to whom you're bailing it to. It's an agreement. That means it's a contract. Okay? Of personal property. It's got to be personal. You cannot have real property as a bailment. Okay? You got to have delivery. You can't deliver real property, can you? I can't pick up my property and give it to you. Okay? There is an exception. Let me tell a story. Let me get through this and then I'll tell a story. Pretty good story. Okay? Purpose. You got to have a reason why you're bailing it. And then you've got to enter it into, for the benefit of one or both parties, and it's got to be returned.
An essential element of this is you give it to the bailor, or bailee, you're the bailor, you give it to the bailee, they got to give it back to you. Okay?
Delivery, agreement, personal property for a purpose, entered into benefit of one or both parties, ended with re-delivery. Okay?
There is no transfer of title. What is a classic bailment situation? What's the number one thing you think of maybe when you think of a bailment? Sorry? No, it's just that kind of thing. Yeah. He said jam. Actually, the word comes out of the same word. Bailment, good example of one. Who has parked your car in the parking garage in New York City? Okay? That's a bailment. You turn around, and you go to the parking garage, you give them their car, you give them the keys, they take your car, and they will return it to you for a fee. Now, who has seen the movie Ferris Bueller? What do they do with the car? Take it on a joyride. Do they have the right to do that? What do you think? No! The bailee does not, the person who has failed, does not have the right to use the product except for a certain circumstance. To give an example of certain circumstances, they do have the ability, when they give them the keys to that car, to be able to drive it to the parking spot. They don't have to use telekinesis, okay? They can drive the car to the parking spot. Like Ferris Bueller, however, they don't get to do a tour of the city of Chicago. Okay? But they can drive it to the parking spot.
It's a contract. Remember, it's a contract. It's an express contract. Transfer of possession. You have to deliver the item. Remember, that's one of the, that's the deed. Okay? You have to deliver the item. It's an actual transfer. Unless and until the actual transfer occurs, the bailee has no rights. Okay? Intent to exercise control. To create a bailment that imposes some element of responsibility on the bailee. Okay, that's the person who takes it. New York holds that the bailee must have the intent to exercise control. If I turn around and ask you to save heat by nuclear waste, you may not want to do that. So if you don't have intent to take that for a fee, there is no bailment. Okay? Possession cannot be thrust on a bailee without their consent. I can't just leave that little box of nuclear waste with you and say, oh, you're my bailee. You have to intend to take it. Okay.
Remember, contract requires both parties.
Okay. Intent to exercise control. You do have some instances of involuntary bailments where the law will impose a duty on them to do that. However, that is a rare circumstance. Okay? There's certain times when that does occur, but involuntary bailments, don't concern yourselves about it because they are so rare. They're basically imposed as a right of public policy. Okay? Okay. When can you look at a bailment of a car as a bailment versus a rental agreement? I'll give you an example. If I turn around and park in Yankee Stadium, okay, I keep my car keys. I take them with me. I am renting a spot. I am not delivering the custody of my car over to the parking garage. I don't give them my keys. They don't drive it away from me. That's not a bailment. If, however, I give them custody of the vehicle by delivering my keys to them and say, please take good care of my car, it's a beautiful brand new Monday, I am doing a bailment with the parking garage. Okay?
Okay.
check rooms, whatever. Bailment versus consignment. Consignment is kind of a popular thing sometimes with college students who shop at secondhand stores sometimes. They know what I'm talking about. Consignment is when I give you that item for the purposes of selling that. Okay? You're taking that item under your control for the purposes of being my agent to sell it. That's really not a bailment. Why? There's no redelivery, correct? What's that arm and dapper? You gotta give it back. And the quintessential element of a bailment is you gotta give it back. Consignment, you wanna give it to a third party for money. Okay? Bailment versus sale. Obviously, with a sale, it involves the transfer of not only possession, but title. And you never give it back. Okay? Okay. When can you use bailed goods? As we said, using the example of taking the car to parking lot, they have the ability for implied or incidental use. They can take the car and park it in the parking space. Okay? They cannot take it for a joyride. There's also other uses. Let's go back to our friend Al. Okay? Jesse? If I turn around, you want me to take care of Pesky. Sorry, you have to do that because I'm a caretaker, but I promise. One of the things that you need to do with towels, I understand, I'm not an expert on that, but I understand that. One of the things you need to do is rub them. They get sick if you don't, okay? With depression, with cats. So as a result of that, I have to milk that cow every day. I get the benefit of milk. But that's inherent to keep the cow healthy and happy. I have to milk it. That's the use of the cow. That's the best exception. It really isn't a law, not even. Remember I told you that they're obsessed with animals. Well, like, what? Okay? So if you fail me your cow, I get to milk her. Okay? That's an incidental use to be able to keep that cow healthy and safe. Now, as part, remember, a bailment's a contract. It's an agreement. That's the A and Alpha. We can have an bailment where I tell you that you can use the item. I go to Antarctica for an adventure. And I say, you know, I have this great laptop computer that I just bought, and I really love it. Would you take good care of it for me? Because my teenagers are trying to get their hands on it. And I know they'll load it up with all kinds of viruses and horrible things going down the internet or doing whatever they do with it. So please take care of it. And I know that you are a responsible young person and will not do such things. So I tell you, if you take care of my computer, I'll give you $15 when I come home, and you can use it as much as you want. Just, you know, stay off the virus for me. Okay? You can do that pursuant to the contract, pursuant to the agreement. Okay? That's the agreed use. Okay? What can you sue a bailee for? Breach of contract. I turn around and I say, I'm going to pay you $100 to watch my computer. Please don't open it. And if you turn around and open it, I can sue you. Give me that $100 back because I turned around and found out you opened it. You violated our agreement. Okay? If you broke the computer because you have a duty of care with respect to it, I could sue you. If you don't redeliver it, that's the cardinal sin of bailments. That's stealing. That's conversion. If you do that, you do not get to keep it. I can sue you for it for damages or replug. Give it back. What determines the bailee's duty of care? The bailee, remember, EE is the person who receives it. What is their duty of care dependent on? It's dependent on whose benefit the bailment is for. If it's for the benefit of the bailor, that's the person giving it to you, then you have the lowest duty of care, reasonable care. If it's for your benefit,
I turn around and say, you can use my computer because you asked me for it, just taking care of it, that's available for your benefit, then you have the highest duty of care. If it's for mutual benefit, I'm going to Antarctica, I'll pay the $15 and you can use it. Guess what? That's the mid-level of care. If it's for my benefit, okay, lowest level. If it's for your benefit, the bailee, highest level. Makes sense, okay? If it's for both of us, in between, okay? Okay. What happens with liability? That's, you know, who's responsible for this? Where's absolute liability? Where you're always going to get nailed, where the courts are always going to hold you responsible if you do not follow the agreement. If I tell you don't open that computer and you do, guess what? You're absolutely liable and I can sue you. Okay? If you have a duty, I give you my computer and I say, you're not going to be gone for 2 years, please keep insurance on that in case something happens. And your next door neighbor's dumps a cup of coffee on it and ruins it, and you didn't keep that renter's insurance to keep it safe, keep it protected and insured, guess what? I get to sue you on it. Missed delivery. What's that? You either didn't give it to me or you gave it back to somebody else. I didn't get it back. That's absolute liability. Okay? You know you're going to get nicked. Okay. Reimbursement. General rule is all ordinary expenses must be borne by the bailee. Remember, this is an agreement. I'm usually paying you for this. So the person receiving the item is the one who's for ordinary expenses. Extraordinary expenses, however, are the bailors. Okay? If a bailment is for mutual benefit, the bailee is entitled to receive the agreed-upon compensation in the absence of the agreement, reasonable value. Okay? Okay. Termination by agreement, and that usually is, hey, listen, give me my item back. At the end of a month, you'll give it back to me. That's your agreement. Okay? That terminates it. Conduct of the parties, if you give it back to me before that, okay, or if I demand it back, those two things will terminate. Remember, a bailment's a contract. You can agree to do anything in the middle of it that you want. Okay? All right. Two-story or one-story, and then we'll take our break. Remember I said you can't really deliver real property? There's an exception to that. Now, I'm going to take you back to the days and age of kings and horses, knights. Back when most people did not know how to write, how do they transfer property? Today we turn around, and we'll get to that in real property. But today we turn around and we give you something, a document known as a deed. We'll get to this extensively on when we do real property. They write up a description of the property and give it to the person that they're transferring, and that person gives the seller's money. But what do you do in a society where few people are literate? Well, you have a ceremony. You get all the townspeople together. I'm a knight. I decide that I have this big castle, awesome castle, but you know, I don't need it. I'm going to fight the crusade. So my next door neighbor wants to buy my land, don't need it. So I bring him over and I call the entire town together. And I have everybody stand around the physical property. And we conduct this ceremony known as Liberty of Season. I take out my sword and carve a big clump of the sod out. And in front of all my friends and neighbors, I literally pick up the sod I just cut out and hand it to my neighbor in front of all the townspeople. And then he hands me the money. Now, why do I do this in front of all the townspeople? That way people recognize it. They know it. Everybody in the town knows I sold the property. So when the guy comes over, the next door neighbor goes and moves his mother-in-law into my house, they know that it's his property to do that. But they need one more thing. Right now, you turn around and you record that deed with the county clerk. That means the county clerk, governmental entity, usually a nice little old lady, turns around and takes that deed and puts it in a file drawer. So anybody who wants, matter of fact, these things are on the internet now. Before that, they were these great big books. Literally, like something out of Indiana Jones and Dirt Age Dust Block. They recorded that so the whole world would know who owned that piece of property. Well, back then, nobody knew how to read, so you didn't have any deeds. So how do you get the whole world to remember that ceremony? Anybody have an idea? They picked out a four-year-old or thereabout child out of that whole crowd that you invited. They beat the ever-loving stuffing out of them. Why? Because he was old enough to sustain the meeting, but young enough to remember that for the rest of his life. Pretty horrible, but true. And he would always remember,
yeah, it was the day that they transferred that property.
A horrible thing to do. Today, I much prefer the fact that we put it in a dusty old plug for it. Four-year-old children all over. That's called livery of season, where they come outside in the ceremony and transfer. What's livery? Transfer. Anybody here from New York City? Ever take a cab ride? What do they call? Yeah, what do they call? What license is a cab driver? Called a livery license. Okay? Where do you think the word deliver? What does that mean? Where do you think delivery comes from? Livery. Okay? Livery means you deliver. Season comes actually from a Scandinavian word meaning land or sky. Okay? Livery season means transferring the land, delivering it in that ceremony. Thank God we don't have to beat up the border of it anymore. Come on back and do our case and we'll get you out of here. 10 minutes. Everybody get the sign sheet? Come down with you. Grab the case. I'm going to have you come up. Yep. Great. Yep. Let's do it up. Okay. Where does it go? You got to tell me how it goes. You have to tell me where it goes because you want it. And I'll tell you how. No problem. You want it. You can sit directly. So just tell me what you want to do. Because the schools do not do a lot of recognition. It comes from you. It comes from us. It comes from you.
Okay. Australia is quite a ways from England. don't have airlines. You don't have bigger boats to ship this. So it's got to sail from England to Australia to get to your dock call. So you say, purchaser, hire me a crew to sail it back. Now, serious crew people know that a 52-foot yacht may be big in the yacht yard, but it ain't so big in a great big ocean. So it's rather hard to find a crew that is anxious to be able to sail such a vessel all the way from England to Australia. But your money is green, John, and you are able to hire a crew. If you do, please go sit down. Captain Dudley, come forth, please. This is Thomas Dudley. He is an experienced captain, but it's been a while since he has had his own ship. He needs a job. He knows that a 50-foot yacht, a big ocean, is a rather treacherous adventure. That being said, you need a job. You then recruit two able-bodied seamen. Edwin Stevens and Edwin Brooks. Please come forward. Mr. Stevens has got a wife and a kid. He's an experienced sailor. He knows what's going on. Mr. Brooks, not as much. Okay? You have no wife, you have no kids. Okay? That being said, you need a job. So you jump on board. Now, go to your cruise ships. Captain Stephen. Hearing that you now have no ship, a neighbor comes to you, Mr. Parker, and says, I have a young son, 17, who knows the way in the world, God bless you, needs a job. Needs a trade. He has talked about becoming a sailor. Would you mind taking him on this little adventure as your cabin boy? You are somewhat hesitant. You know this is going to be dangerous, but you could use the extra pair of hands. Even though this is a small boat, you sail all the way to Australia. The bottom line of this is, 52-foot yacht still needs a lot of crew. So, Mr. Parker, you agree to take out his fine young son, Richard. Okay? Guys, go stand over there and start sailing. May 19th, 1884, you set sail for Australia. All excited, beautiful day, it's May. You set sail south. And you go around the coast of Africa. You hit the Cape of Good Hope, which is the Cape around Africa. I have never personally been there. I have been around Cape Horn, which is around South America. Quite a bit further south, goes between South America and Antarctica. And I'll tell you, it's one rough place. You have your stomach, you're going to be stomach. And I imagine Cape Hope is the same thing. The waters get rough. You hit a storm. A 54-foot yacht in 100-foot seas is not a pleasant experience. Any of you who have seen the perfect storm understand that. But this is before the day and age where that yacht was propelled by a motor. It was a sailing craft. You're in the middle of the night, 100-foot seas. A rogue wave comes over the boat and washes you capsizing your boat. It also washes over the life raft. You quickly all swim to the life raft and say, oh my God, we're saved, at least in the life raft, as the bigamet goes blub, blub, blub down to the bottom of the ocean. You've traded your 54-foot tiny yacht for a 13-foot lifeboat. Okay? Now, because that rogue wave sunk
cooking so fast, there's no real food in the lifeboat except for one tin of turnips.
Yucky on a good day, but hunger is the best sauce, and four people, although you're less of a scrappy young man than you are right now, four people have to survive off of one tin of turnips, if probably smaller than your laptop. No fresh water. You, however, being experienced sailors, are able to collect that water. You get darn hungry. The turnips don't last very long. Matter of fact, on the fourth day, you finish eating the turnips. You try to spread it out as much, but there's no food. Now, because there's no food, you're really, really hungry. Remember, the ship goes down on July 5th. They have the support fly. July 17th, that's 12 days later, after catching a sea turtle, not a great big one, a pretty little one, you're able to take that sea turtle, cover it up, and eat it. That's the only thing we've had to eat. July 17th comes along, 12 days, you're getting pretty darn hungry. Okay? Now the boys stand over there, crew, come in.
They're getting hungry.
You have a brilliant idea. You're really hungry. Let's kill the cowboy and eat him.
You have some degree of morality. You say, I don't think that's a very good idea. You remember the cabin boy's parents and say, you know, I'm hungry, but not that hungry. Okay? But you think this is the way to get
looking pretty good. Four more days pass by. Every hour of every day, you're hunting at the edge of the 13-foot lifeboat, and I can't imagine a lot of private conversations can happen in a 13-foot lifeboat. Okay? But you keep lobbying, principally your fellow crewmen, not so much the captain because he doesn't listen to you. We've got to kill that cabin boy to make us survive because we need it. So, you keep saying no. You come up with another idea. Come on, little cabin boy. Cabin boy's only 17. He's not a very worldly guy. You're pretty worldly. You keep saying, oh, I'm so sorry you're so thirsty. If you drink seawater, you'll develop a taste for it. It'll be okay. Now, what happens when you drink seawater, particularly when you're dehydrated? You get sick as a pup. He's drinking seawater. Now, reportedly, you two don't know about this. He's drinking seawater, getting sick as can be, getting dehydrated, and shrinking in size. Kind of against that whole eating thing, but you're getting him sick. And as a result, you're going to your friends, you know, he's sick anyway, we should kill him. He's going to die soon anyway. Who's ever seen that Monty Python movie where they turn around, they bring out the dead, the guy's not quite dead yet? Not quite dead yet. He will be soon. He keeps lobbying them to kill him. Saying, you know, we gotta survive. He's sick anyway. Up to this point in time, the end of July, you keep saying no. You guys have your own little huddle. You keep lobbying. Finally, they just say, well, we're not gonna pay attention. So they go on the other side of the boat. You get your idea. This is my time. You walk up to the cabin boy and say, sorry, pal, your dinner. It's your time. Pretty rough on the poor cabin boy that you coaxed him to get sick all day. You slit his throat. You two turn around and say, what have you done? They're reportedly praying on the side of the boat. They know. You kill him, and then everybody says, well, he's dead anyway. Let's eat him. They eat the cabin boy. People sit down with this. Yeah. you're now kind of refreshed. You ate the cabin boy. No. What does luck happen after such a thing happens? You got it! Almost out of nowhere a ship comes by. Now, I'm sorry to say, but you guys are idiots. The ship that comes by says, what happened? You said, we had this ship, it went down, we were in the lifeboat, cowboy got sick, so we killed a man. That's prima facie really dumb. You were the only witnesses. No, I'm not telling you a lie.
But if the ship were found and the cabin boy were found,
you tell them the truth. They take you back home to England. Go sit down. When they get home to England on the ship, where's Mr. Parker?
Cabin boy. You have to compare us. They get over since you got eaten for lunch. They don't particularly like that. They go to the authorities and say, sailors aren't food. That constitutes murder. So the three crew get charged with murder. They decide to come up with a novel defense. Necessity. We were hungry. We were thirsty. He was sick anyway. What do you think the jury held? Was it okay to kill the cabin boy and eat him? No. The fact that you're hungry doesn't allow you to do murder. This case held that the defense of necessity is not a defense to murder. And they killed him. They literally slit his throat. And then ate him. Now, this was the O.J. trial of the 1880s in England. People literally, hundreds of people came to the courthouse every day to try and get clips of this. It was so gruesome and interesting. The defenses to murder are not necessity, not that I was hungry. It's if your life is in jeopardy. Their life wasn't being endangered by the cabin boy. The fact that their life was endangered by hunger didn't count. The defense of yourself or others would be a defense to murder. If the cabin boy tried to kill them, or if when they tried to kill the cabin boy, he defended himself by killing the other person, that would have been a defense. But the mere fact that their bellies were empty and they were going to die of starvation doesn't count. Now, that's what the case held. There's only certain defenses to certain crimes. Necessity is not a defense to murder. Now, because this was such a sensational trial, and because of the fact that it got so much popularity, there was a lot of sympathy for these sailors, believe it or not, even though you killed them and ate them. They figured that they were crazy because they were in that boat, so far from home, not thinking straight, sun baking down on them, not in their right mind. So even though they were convicted of murder, the queen, Victoria, turned around and commuted their sentence. Anybody know what a commution is of a sentence? What does that mean, your sentence? Didn't pardon them. When you have an executive authority to commute a sentence, it means they shortened it. That means that they got 2 years in prison. Did not get a capital offense, which was their murder. They didn't get executed, they didn't get thrown in life imprisonment. They got a 2-year jail sentence.
Any questions? See you next week.